Adolf Loos, Building Materials, from 1898. Which is worth more, a kilogram of stone or a kilogram of gold? The question probably seems ridiculous, but only to the merchant, the artist, will answer. All materials are equally valuable as far as I am concerned. The Venus of Milo would be equally valuable whether it was made of the rubble which paved the streets in Paros, the streets were paved with Parian marble, or gold. The Sistine Madonna would not be worth a penny more if Raphael had mixed a few pounds of gold into his colours. A merchant who has to consider melting down the golden Venus in case of need or scraping off the Sistine Madonna will of course calculate differently. The artist has only one ambition, to master his material in such a way that his work is independent of the value of the raw material. Our architects, however, have not heard of this ambition. For them, a square meter of wall surface out of granite is more valuable than a square meter out of plaster. But granite in and of itself is worthless. It lies all around outside in the fields. Anyone can get hold of it. It forms whole mountains, whole mountain ranges, which one only has to dig up. The streets are topped with it and the cities are paved with it. It is the most common stone, the most ordinary material that we know. And yet there are people who consider granite our most precious building material. These people say material, but they mean work. Human labour, technical skill and artistry. For granite demands much work to wrest it from the mountains, much work to bring it to the designated location, work to give it the correct form and to endow it with a pleasing appearance by cutting and polishing. Our hearts beat with reverential awe at the sight of the polished granite wall. Awe for the material? No, awe for the human work. So might granite then be more valuable than plaster? We have still not said that. For a wall with a plaster decoration by the hand of Michelangelo would overshadow even the most highly polished granite wall. It is not just the quantity, but the quality of the work performed that determines the value of an object. We live in a time that gives precedence to the quantity of work performed. For quantity is easily controlled. It is immediately obvious to anyone and demands no skilled eye or special knowledge. Thus, there are no errors. So many workers have worked at a job for so many hours and such a wage. Anyone can calculate it. And we want to make the value of things with which we surround ourselves easy to understand, or else there would be no point to them. Thus, those things that took a longer time to make must deserve more respect. It was not always this way. Formerly, one built with the materials that were the most easily obtainable. In some regions, this was brick, in some with stone. In some, the walls were stuccoed. Did those who used stucco consider themselves somewhat inferior to the architects who built in stone? Of course not. Why should they have? The idea did not occur to anyone. If there were quarries in the vicinity, one simply built out of stone. But to bring stone to a building from far away seemed more a matter of money than of art. And art, the quality of a work, meant more formally than it does today. Times like those brought out proud, strong natures in the field of architecture. Fischer von Erlach did not need granite to make himself understood. He works out of clay, limestone and sand. Works that capture our attention as powerfully as the best buildings made out of materials that are the most difficult to handle. His spirit, his artistry, mastered the most miserable materials. He was capable of bestowing the nobility of art on the most plebeian dust. He was a king in the realm of materials. Today it is not the artist who rules, but rather the day labourer, not the creative idea, but the working hours. And the rulership is gradually being wrested even from the hands of the day labourer, for something has happened that has a quantitatively better and cheaper work output, the machine. But any amount of production time, whether of the machine or the coolie, costs money. And if one has no money, then one begins to fake the working hours and to imitate materials. The reverence for the quality of work done is the most fearsome enemy that the crafts profession has, for it results in imitation, and imitation has demoralized a large part of our crafts. All pride, all handicraft spirit have left it. Book printer, what can you do? I can print books in such a way that they are taken for lithographs. And lithographer, what can you do? I can make lithographs that are taken for prints. Carpenter, what can you do? I can carve ornaments that look so easy you could mistake them for stucco work. And stucco worker, what can you do? I can imitate mouldings and ornaments exactly and make hairline joints that appear so authentic that they look like the best stone masonry. But I can do that too, cries the sheet metal worker proudly. When my ornaments are painted and sanded, no one would suspect that they are made out of tin. What a pitiful group. A spirit of self-degradation pervades our crafts. It is no surprise that this profession is doing so badly. Such people cannot help but do badly. Carpenter, be proud that you are a carpenter. It is the stucco worker who makes ornaments. You should pass him by without jealousy or envy. And you, stucco worker, what have you to do with the stonemason? The stonemason makes joints, unfortunately has to make joints, since little stones are cheaper to come by than big ones. Be proud of the fact that your work does not exhibit the paltry joints that cut the stonemason's columns, ornaments, and walls into sections. Be proud of your profession. Be happy that you are not a stonemason. But I am talking to the wind. The public does not want a proud craftsman. For the better the craftsman can imitate, the more the public will support him. Reverence for expensive materials, the surest sign of the parvenu stage in which our nation currently finds itself, will have it no other way. The parvenu considers it disgraceful not to be able to adorn himself with diamonds, disgraceful not to be able to wear fur hats, disgraceful not to be able to live in a stone palace. Ever since he has learned that diamonds, furs, and stone palaces cost a great deal of money, he does not know that the lack of diamonds, furs, and stone facades has no effect on elegance. Therefore, since he is short of money, he grasps for surrogates, a ridiculous enterprise. For those people whom he wants to deceive, those, that is, endowed with the means to surround themselves with diamonds, furs, and stone facades, cannot be fooled. They find his efforts laughable, and his efforts are further unnecessary vis-a-vis those of a lower standing than his if he is conscious of his own superiority anyway. In the last decade, imitation has dominated the entire building industry. Wall coverings are made out of paper, but this they may by no means show. They must retain the patterns of damask silk or gobelin tapestries. Doors and windows are made out of softwood, but since hardwood is more expensive, the softwood must be painted to look like it. Iron must be painted to look like bronze or copper. But against poured cement, an achievement of this century, we are entirely helpless. Since cement is in and of itself a splendid material, we have just one thought whenever we use it, the same thought that we have upon first confronting any new material. What can we imitate with it? We used it as a surrogate for stone. And since poured concrete is so extremely inexpensive, like the parvenus that we are, we indulged in the most thoroughgoing wastefulness. A true cement epidemic gripped the century. Oh, my dear Herr Architect, couldn't you put just a little more art on the facade for another 5 gulden? The vain contractor probably said. And the architect tacked as many gulden worth of art onto the facade as were demanded of him, and sometimes a little more. Nowadays, poured cement is being utilised for the imitation of stucco work. It is characteristic of our Viennese situation that I, who am against the violation of materials, who have combated imitation energetically, am dismissed as being a, quote, materialist. Just look at the sophistry. These are the people who attribute such a value to materials that they have no fear of their becoming characterless and who freely resort to surrogates. The English have exported their wallpaper to us. Unfortunately, they cannot send over entire houses as well. But we can see from their wallpaper just what the English are aiming for. This is wallpaper that is not ashamed to be made of paper. And why should it be? There are certain wall coverings that cost more. But the Englishman is not a parvenu. In his home, it could never occur to anyone that the money had run out. Likewise, his clothes are made of sheep's wool, and they display this honestly. If the leadership in clothing were left to the Viennese, sheep's wool would be woven to look like velvet and satin. Even though it is only made out of wool, English clothing material, and thus our clothing material, never manifests the Viennese, quote, "I'd really like it, but I can't afford it." And that should bring us to a chapter that plays the most important role in architecture, to a principle that should form the ABC of every architect, namely the principle of cladding. But I will reserve discussion of this principle for my next article.